Americans are becoming more obese, and our national security is threatened because of it. This is Brief Before Impact. Hey, welcome everyone. Thank you for joining me. I am Matt Parker. You know, I am I'm a father of some kids, and I think about their future a lot. Nutrition, physical health, all that kind of thing. I think we can all appreciate physical health has been on the minds of, we would hope, most people in the world after a pandemic and how we can be better. And so I want to discuss this issue focused around America's national security. No doubt you've gone to the beach or the park and you notice people are a little more fat than they used to be. I'm just going to say it like it is. It's just an observation, not a judgment. So I'm going to go through some things on why that might be the case, highlighting from recent comments from an official from the Biden administration on how, in my view, they are getting this wrong. And then more broadly, kind of a cultural issue and other countries around the world, what they're doing about similar challenges their countries are facing. But before we get into it, let me take a quick ad break and then we will get to work. Now, welcome everyone. So according to Fox News, a physician came under fire for some comments claiming that obesity is more of genetics than a lifestyle in a 60 Minutes interview earlier this month. That physician's now a member of the Biden's USDA's 2025 Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee, which will help determine dietary standards for Americans over the coming years. Dr. Fatima Cody Stanford, a doctor specializing in obesity medicine at Mass General Health in Boston, claims diet and exercise have little impact on the disease that affects nearly half of all Americans. So what does she think people should do about it? Quote, "The number one cause of obesity is genetics," according to Stanford told CBS Leslie Stahl. "That means if you were born to parents that have obesity, you have 50 to 85% likelihood of having the disease yourself, even with optimal diet, exercise, sleep management, and stress management," she added. Now, Stanford elaborated during the interview to claim that an overwhelming majority of U.S. doctors hold a bias towards obese patients. Quote, "Are you saying that doctors don't understand obesity, doctors?" Stanford confirmed, "Doctors do not understand obesity." So her comments kind of coincided in an uptick in the disease in recent years, with the CDC reporting that a percentage of obese Americans shifted from 41.9% in 2020 to 30.5% in 2017. Even more concerning statistics from Harvard University's T.H. Chan School of Public Health indicate 43 million preschool-age children were obese in 2010 worldwide, and the numbers have been on a steady incline since the 1990s. If nothing is done to reverse the epidemic, more than 1 billion adults are projected to be obese by 2030, according to a study. This is quite shocking, to say the least. If you just look at the numbers itself, it's terrifying. But in my mind, it's this view, not to discredit that if you've got obese parents, that you likely will have a higher probability of being obese. Didn't watch the whole interview, to be candid, but in just a few comments being pulled into this report, never they're saying that even with optimal diet and exercise, sleep and stress management, that's not going to have an impact on the disease. I think that is grossly misrepresented, and I completely disagree with that statement. I'll give you some additional data. According to NPR, the data are stark. The typical American diet is shortening the lives of many Americans. Diet-related deaths outrank deaths from smoking, and about half of U.S. deaths are from heart disease. Nearly 900 deaths a day are linked to poor diet. The pandemic highlighted the problem, with much worse outcomes for people with obesity and with other diet-related diseases. Darush Mazafarian, a cardiologist and dean of the Friedman School of Nutrition Science and Policy at Tufts University, said, quote, "We are really in a nutrition crisis in this country," end quote. So we... small comment, you've got two physicians clearly on the opposite side of this issue, just from a few comments that they made. But this point is what's fascinating to me. There's no doubt in my mind that in this moment in history, America is the most productive, fruitful country it's ever existed in the history of the world, right? We are innovative. We can create all sorts of things. We can put people in space, yada, yada. You get where I'm going. That being said, we have people fatter than they've ever been before. They're dying because of their diet more than they're dying because of like things like smoking. 900 people a day are dying in the richest country in the world. And it's not because they're dying from starvation, because they're too fat. So the NPR article goes on to just highlight a few ideas of what we can start changing the culture around food and some policies even perhaps that might benefit this issue. Number one, treat food as a medicine, right? Number two, focus on quality of calories, not just quantity. So obviously making very good decisions on food selection. Three, expand access to dietary and lifestyle counseling. Certainly some people need to understand the links between their diet choices and their life outcomes. Supporting food entrepreneurs, you know, small business owners who are trying to create healthy restaurants. Increase the number of new farmer growings healthy foods using regenerative farming techniques. These often can be far more produced, like a healthier type of beef, for example. I know that we try to focus ourselves on finding local regenerative farms for any steaks that we're looking to buy. Make school meals free for all students, and us also establishing a federal food czar. No doubt that NPR article would make such a claim. That being said, I think there's some highlights here that we can really kind of circle around. That one, the most frustrating, and this is a personal thought here, it's so frustrating, all the variety of opinions on nutrition. I mean, just get on YouTube and say, search diet to get lean. And I mean, you keto, Atkins, intermittent fasting, you name it. There are so many opinions. Oh, you need to do this, you need to do that. It's frustrating because in my mind, I'm like, well, I understand we're not all the same, but calories burn in the body more or less the same way for most people. I'm making a generalization here. So they can't all be correct. So the point is, it's frustrating, one, that there's such a divergence of opinions on just like nutrition. And that's not even just from the YouTube masses. I mean, we're even looking at these two physicians that I quoted here in these couple of articles. So with that backdrop, we got it. America's fat and we keep getting fatter. How does that translate to our national security? Well, it's not good. According to Daniel Bornstein, he's PhD chair of military setting sector, National Physical Activity Plan. He says that the viability of an all-volunteer military to maintain its competitive advantage over near-peer competitors, think China, Iran, Russia, has recently come to question by lawmakers, senior military leaders, and scientists. From recruiting to readiness and retention, all the way to retirement, physical inactivity and obesity pose national security threats that the U.S. military cannot fight alone. During a hearing before the Senate Armed Services Committee, Lieutenant General Ottagnon, Deputy Commandant for the Marine Corps Manpower and Reserve Affairs, testified that the past year has arguably, quote, arguably the most challenging in recruiting history, end quote, mainly due to candidates not meeting physical standards or not having a criminal record. The statement comes on the heels of Pentagon data showing that only 29% of American youth are eligible for military service, and a mere 2% from 17 to 21-year-olds are both eligible and have the propensity to serve, meaning that they can actually meet the requirements and they actually want to go serve. 2%, that's a small portion of the available 17 to 21-year-olds to defend our country. Now, in that same hearing, Senator Tillis from North Carolina stated, "I'm worried we're now in the early days of a long-term threat to the all-volunteer force," end quote, which is supported by evidence on the impact of low physical activity and obesity on military readiness. Multiple studies show across hundreds of thousands of military service members show low physical fitness and obesity, each in direct consequence of physical inactivity, to be highly correlated with musculoskeletal injuries. Those are just labeled like the number one medical impediment to military readiness, annually accounting for about 25 million days of limited duty across the military branches, and costs the DOD like $3.7 billion in medical treatment. Just, I'll interject here. Think about a musculoskeletal injury, one that was common. Like when I was going through special forces training, was guys would get, they would succumb to like hip injuries or even like shin, like really severe shin splints. Most, and a big part of it was that they didn't do a ton of training before they showed up to the Army. like they were more or less kind of soft bodies, and they showed up, and it kind of a overtraining essentially for an unprepared body, it crushed them pretty good. So that's what kind of one of the examples, just put that in your mind. So again, going back to the article, public health evidence indicates that there's no help is on the way for the U.S. military. A recent study found that COVID-19 is responsible for a spike in obesity among American youth population that already had 19.7%, that's about 14 million, of its members being categorized as obese. Meanwhile, a whopping 76% of American youth fail to meet federal physical activity guidelines, according to the CDC. Additional evidence shows that southern states, which are known for their higher rates of obesity and physical inactivity, which happen to be the most fertile ground for military recruiting, produce Army recruits who are significantly less physically fit and more likely to sustain musculoskeletal injuries than recruits from the rest of the country. Failure to address the physical inactivity and obesity epidemics within and outside our military population will weaken our global position. Again, that's according to Daniel Bornstein, PhD. This is something I saw in my military service firsthand. Now, granted, when you gravitate towards special forces, you obviously start leaning into a more focused group of individuals, not just your random individual who's serving in the Army, but someone who's at least motivated to go try out, right? So they more or less likely have done some kind of physical preparation. But I saw guys who were just, I'm like, how do you wear a uniform? You're fat and gross. Like, it was really disturbing. Somehow they skated through. Either they somehow pulled off their physical PT test once a year, or they skipped it, more or less. That thing absolutely happens, and it is affecting our readiness to defend ourselves from a military conflict. Tomorrow, 10 years on the road, it's a problem. So I wanted to think about, okay, recognize people are fatter. Our military recruiting is struggling because kids are fatter and they don't really want to serve anymore. I'm just going to hit on one issue. The issue of video games. I'm not saying all video games are terrible or even playing video games are bad. Not here to make that argument. Don't care. What I am thinking about, though, when I was a kid, like this was before cell phones, the only way, obviously you had a landline, you call your buddy's house, but all we ever did was just ride our bikes around the neighborhood and like dig holes and run around. And just, we're outside constantly. We just did stuff. Later on, so like maybe I was, you know, Nintendos were a thing. They were certainly there, the old school Mario Brothers. They got more advanced. Was it the Nintendo 64? That was a big deal. But again, we kept playing outside far more than we did ever video games. However, there's been a generational shift just over time. Like, you know, kids that are like, for example, I'm in my mid-30s, so those 25-year-olds today, those 15-year-olds, those 5-year-olds even, those different generations, they're technology is such a larger role in their lives, and it's, don't get me wrong, it's really cool technology, but when there's a lack of focus and discipline and rules set in the household, what you can and cannot do around this type of technology, it's affecting generations. I'll just pull out a couple of things from the Daily Mail. 5-year-olds playing 3 or more hours of video games a day are more likely to be overweight as teenagers. And late nights and sugary drinks are also to blame, the study claims. I'll just interject. 5-year-olds playing video games to me is ridiculous. I'm like, you're a 5-year-old. Like, our near 5-year-old daughter has been playing all day with all these different, you know, Play-Dohs, and we were drawing, went to this indoor trampoline place earlier. That's all we ever do. I mean, 5-year-olds playing video games alone, but 3 or more hours a day, that's insane to me. Again, because that's not how I grew up, nor I think these kids should be growing up. So the study of more than 16,000 children looked at what influenced weight gain, and it found those that play lots of video games are more likely to be fat teenagers. Also discovered that late bedtimes and sugary drinks are linked to increased body mass index. That is absolutely troubling. So if we're connecting that there's kind of an out-of-touch physician working for the Biden administration, absolute opposing data from her colleagues in the sphere of the impacts of obesity, and that we're getting more and more and the things that we should change about as a culture around food, directly tied to our national security ability holistically to protect and defend ourselves when fewer people are, number one, capable or even interested in actually fighting for our country. So there's not just an issue of obesity. There's also a culture implication there tied directly to things like technology. I'm highlighting video games to pick on them a little bit here. And so you've got that context now in your mind. I can't have an episode, it seems like, without talking for a moment about what China does. So this isn't related to obesity in this the next upcoming piece about China, but I had read an article months ago, and I wanted to dig back into it because China has been addressing this, I guess you could say, a phenomenon or just a general trend within its population of men, in their own definition, becoming more feminine and less masculine. You know, however they define either term, I don't really dig into it that much, but they are making the claim that more of their men are not masculine as they want them to be, so they're deciding to do something about it. Okay, this is according to CentralAsiaNews.com. China, a country with about 30 million more men than women, okay, because of its controversial one-child policy from 1980 to 2015, it's in the midst of a, quote, masculinity crisis, according to the Chinese Communist Party leaders. Effeminate men in popular culture are corrupting a generation, top officials had said. The CCP mouthpiece People's Daily declared that young men need to have toughness and strength. The campaign to toughen up Chinese men is a linchpin of Chinese leader Xi Jinping's plan to regain China's position as a superpower, first and foremost by boosting the country's military capability. In late January 2021, the Education Ministry announced a new policy designed to turn the surplus of Chinese men into soldiers. The ministry presented its plans to strengthen masculinity education for boys in a response to a previous proposal from a top policy advisor. The title of the notice, quote, "The Proposal to Prevent the Feminization of Male Adolescents," end quote. It leaves little doubt about its goals. The text calls on schools to reform physical education and to recruit retired athletes and other Chinese from sporting backgrounds with a view to cultivating students' masculinity. It mentioned, in particular, the vigorous development of sports like soccer, which is a favorite of Xi Jinping's. It's also expressed hope that China will become a world football, you know, world soccer power by 2050. Now, boys have become too delicate, timid, and effeminate after being raised by their mothers and grandmothers and schooled mostly by female teachers, the ministry said. Many Chinese teenage boys nowadays have characteristics of weakness, low self-esteem, and timidity, and they tend to follow the pretty boy superstars. This is Zi Sefu, a member of the Chinese People's Political Consultative Conference, said in May 2020. Many no longer want to be army heroes, he warned. This feminization of Chinese men will inevitably endanger the survival and development of the Chinese nation unless it is effectively managed, he said. I find this absolutely fascinating. That, number one, I didn't know that was something that the Chinese Communist Party thought was an issue for the country. And what's more fascinating is just their role in figuring it out. They are going what seems the opposite direction of, certainly here in the United States and other Western powers, emphasizing the importance of masculinity from just a position of world standing, as well as their own military development, right? They believe that masculinity, they don't really define what that means, just kind of use that term. Masculinity, I suppose, in the traditional sense, I guess I could emphasize being the opposite of things like being delicate, timid, and effeminate. You know, that would be, I suppose, in their definition, the definition of masculinity. They're pushing back in this and actually creating policy to fix it. Now, what I find, just reading some of these words as they describe their own boys, delicate, timid, and effeminate, being raised by mothers, grandmothers, and schooled by mostly female teachers, I don't know, just when I take a quick glance around the part of America that I live in, first one, a lot of school teachers, females, no big issue about that. Sadly, a lot of men don't hold up their responsibilities and stick around to raise the kids that they father because they're weak, and so therefore, they're being raised by single moms or grandmothers. So there's number one, there's a lot of female influence over young boys. Not a problem. However, boys definitely need men influencing their lives. Otherwise, they don't know how to behave. Why do you think you see these young boys and young men doing stupid stuff, whether that's a life of crime or just being kind of worthless and lazy, not having any direction, wanting to live in their parents' basement until they're in their mid-20s or 30s. And this is, I believe, a direct correlation. I'm getting off a bit of the topic of obesity, but these things that are based in culture, including technology, including the importance of traditional values to influence the next generation, this has second and third order effects. You know, I'm highlighting, this is a global trend, not just here in the United States, but on the other side of the world in China. So I'll kind of close out with this thought on obesity in the United States as it affects our national security standing. And I'm going to contrast that to the attitudes of the Chinese, okay? Here in the United States, it's definitely the place like, hey, you live how you want to, do what you want, which I think is great. The problem with that is that there's not enough personal responsibility, especially from parents who do not demand that their children make good decisions because they themselves are not making good decisions with their own nutrition, with their own lifestyle. This is what I think needs to be adjusted. So it's not just mere, oh, we need an administration or an official at the White House saying this is good food and this is not. No, that's a tiny piece of it, the policy piece. I think this is more broadly a cultural societal issue. We need to start emphasizing what's important for the longevity of our lives, not just our physical health, but our mental health as well. We all just went through this ridiculous pandemic, and we saw people who, frankly, if you want to even exclude the elderly, and just those who are had underlying health issues. Obesity was one of those. That's the data states that. I'm not making it up or picking on people with obesity. It's just a fact. If we don't emphasize the point that we need to be disciplined and make better decisions for ourselves, for our children, the next generations, and so on, we are going to be in a world of trouble if we're not able to pivot at this time. There has to be a generation who decides, hey, I'm not going to go down that path. My kids are not going to do that. We're going to go the different direction. I hope people in and around about my age are on the same train as that my family is, because I believe very much in this topic, and I think we have a responsibility for ourselves and the next generation, for the security of our country, for the well-being of our citizens, to make good decisions when it comes to the nutrition that we're consuming. So I hope you enjoyed this episode. As always, I hope you are picking up what I'm putting down. I am Matt Parker. This is Brief Before Impact.